Hello, and welcome to the IP Need podcast. My name's Edward Loughton, and I'm the editor of Industrial Plant and Equipment magazine. Now, why would nearly one in three manufacturers, in a recent Make UK survey, feel that China has a better tax and regulatory system than the UK? We'll be speaking with Fahim Khan, senior economist at Make UK, to look at what's behind that sentiment. We'll also be joined by Naomi Stewart to discuss some of the highlights at Packaging Innovations and MPAC, which are set to take place at Birmingham's NEC this February. And if you enjoy this podcast, why not stop by our website, ipneesearch.co.uk, and sign up to receive the free digital edition of our bi-monthly magazine, bringing together informative insights and all the latest products and solutions. You can also follow us on social media. Just search for Industrial Plant and Equipment Magazine on LinkedIn or at IPE Magazine on X. Now, at one time, Britain was known for its stable politics. However, with five prime ministers in the 7 years since Brexit, it's fair to say the country has been going through some turbulent political times. The impact of this political upheaval is reflected in a recent report by Make UK, Manufacturing Growth, Building a Competitive Business Environment, which spotlights that some 99% of manufacturers believe the UK needs a long-term industrial strategy. We're joined by Fahim Khan, senior economist at Make UK, to discuss several of the key takeaways from that report. Hi Fahim, thank you for joining us.
Welcome.
So to start off with, could you tell us a bit more about this report and some of its key takeaways?
Yes, I'm happy to. So to kind of give you a bit of context on why we did this research. So earlier in 2023, we had a separate study where we tried to get an understanding of what manufacturers feel that they have been lacking in the UK in terms of their ambitions to grow. We were doing a bit of a review from Make UK's perspective on what's happened in the last 10 years. And in that survey, we found that 99% of manufacturers said that they believe that the UK needs an industrial strategy, and 8 in 10 businesses from that sample said that the absence of a strategy, a long-term plan, has been the reason that they've not been able to grow. Now, whilst we had pinned down that it's pretty clear that manufacturers want this, we hadn't really had the details or the ideas of what should really be in an industrial strategy. What do manufacturers want to see? And this is what this piece of research was really about. It was about understanding, if we were to have an industrial strategy, what would we target as areas for change to ensure that the competitive environment is best placed to support the needs of manufacturers.
And in terms of the report, so what were some of the conclusions that, or some of the feedback that you received from manufacturers?
Yeah, so we specifically targeted three areas of focus. The first one was on tax and regulation, so we know what needs to change about the tax and regulatory environment. The second one was on infrastructure and manufacturers' views on what they want government priorities to be on infrastructure. And the third thing is, which was a bit of a kind of a special story on, because the government has all this interest in something called investment zones and free ports, we thought, what do manufacturers think about place-based incentives? So in terms of the tax and regulation, what we have really found is that the burden that manufacturers experience from the current tax and regulatory regime in the UK is down to its complexity. It's how cumbersome it is. It's not just the ability to apply tax codes. Over 60% of manufacturers said that they face difficulties in understanding and applying tax reliefs to different policies, and manufacturers often find themselves having to overinvest in order to ensure that they comply with regulations. So what we're seeing is that manufacturers, whilst the government has often focused on creating very new ideas and new tools and voucher schemes and that sort of thing, actually what manufacturers are telling us that within the existing system for tax and regulations, they want to see simplification, they want to see more long-term certainty, they want to see more generosity, and they want to make sure that none of that changes for a long period of time. Looking at infrastructure, slightly different conclusions because it was a very different study. We found that manufacturers really want the government to prioritize investment in 5G and fiber optic networks. They want investment in roads more so they do want it in rail, which I think is quite interesting given the HS2 announcements we've had in the UK. And then when we're looking at place-based incentives, we find that businesses are probably, at least manufacturers specifically, are not that interested in what the government's doing with free ports and investment zones. So we would say that maybe it's not necessarily the best place for Treasury to direct all of its funding to developing these things.
Oh, that's very interesting. So I believe a surprising 28% of the businesses you surveyed felt that the UK's tax and regulatory regime was worse than China's. So just to unpack that a bit, as it's quite surprising, what are some of the reasons for this?
Yeah, so we were very fascinated by this stat. Now, in isolation, 28% is not a huge figure across the sample. So we wouldn't say that this is the majority view, but we still found that that percentage share of businesses saying that the UK has a worse tax and regulatory system than China is a lot higher than we would have expected to be. And we would have expected countries like US, Germany, Italy, France, which are on the top five, should have been higher in that ranking, but they weren't. And you know, we thought quite a bit about this, and we had discussions with members about, you know, what do you mean by the UK is worse than China? And it just to be clear, the manufacturers don't have the ambition to have the UK to emulate itself to become, let's say, the sweatshop of Europe, because actually that's not what it's striving for. And there's also, from a regulatory point of view, manufacturers in the UK, whilst they do find regulations to be quite burdensome, they also do see the many benefits of regulations, because it ensures that you buy chemicals and hazardous materials that meet certain standards in the UK, or products, or your workers in the UK will have ensure health and safety. But when we ask again, so what is it about China that you look at it and think, you know, we wish we had that? And it's the ease of doing business is what manufacturers refer to. And what I mean by that is, when you have startups in the UK and they have a new product, they have new ideas, proof of concepts, and they want to, okay, they've got this idea they want to make, they want to mass produce it. It's very difficult to find a supplier or invest in a factory or open up a facility that you will be able to bring that product to market to the mass. And often we have seen examples of startups, even within our own network, where they have really struggled once they had that idea ready, to find the ability to actually expand and access global markets very quickly. But in China, they've had that ability to find somebody who's willing to make what they wanted to make within the space of a week or 2 weeks. And there was this real freedom that to make anything in China that manufacturers in the UK may slightly envy. Although that in China, it may come at the price of a lack of regulations, a lack of systems, a lack of support. Don't know if the UK manufacturers will necessarily be willing to pay that price, but then they'd look at that and think, well, why can't we have that sort of freedom to make almost anything we want? So I think that's what they were looking at when they put China as, you know, a place where the UK is not as good as.
Well, that's very interesting. And I'm just thinking, from the point of view of government, do you think these concerns on the part of manufacturers are something that the government's aware of?
I think it's something that they're becoming more aware of. I would say that in the last 3 or 4 years now, there's been a huge spotlight in the manufacturing industry, something that, you know, it was pretty clear that the government didn't necessarily understand what manufacturing is in the UK. There was this perception that we didn't make anything in the UK, and I think that's always been wrong, and something Make UK and other institutions have always been fighting to disprove, that actually the UK is a manufacturing powerhouse. We are the eighth largest manufacturer in the world by value of output, which puts us just above France but just below Italy. So we're, you know, pushing above our weight, given that we only contribute to about 10% of the UK GDP. But we have seen that it has taken a long time for government to actually fully grasp that. You know, we've seen piecemeal support over the last couple of years. We've seen ideas like the Help to Grow digital voucher, which, you know, on paper was a really good idea, but the take up of it was very low because manufacturers didn't find that the right technologies were enabled. So you couldn't use the voucher to buy ERP systems or MRP systems. You could only buy softwares for accounting and that sort of thing, or e-commerce, which is not what they were looking for. The super deduction capital allowances scheme, which was a very, very generous capital allowance scheme specifically for manufacturing, but then businesses, you know, it was only around for 2 years, and businesses were telling us, look, it's a great idea, but we don't invest in 2 year cycles. We invest in 5, 6, 7, 8 year cycles, and we need policy support that meets or is sensitive to that. We have seen in the most recent autumn statement, though, that I think there's been maybe a light bulb moment for government where they're actually starting to understand, actually, you can't have short-term piecemeal support for an industry like manufacturing. They do think long-term. They're much more long-term than, let's say, finance, who is always looking for quick returns. Manufacturing is always looking for slow, long-term, but positive growth, but which can last for many, many decades. And we saw that with the announcements of full expensing, which is 100% capital allowances. It's slightly less generous than super deduction, being made permanent in the most recent statement from the Chancellor. So we think that maybe we're slowly getting there. I think government is starting to grasp this, but you know, we have to keep doing these studies to highlight what manufacturers are thinking and where they're seeing that there are barriers to growth and what they want to change. In fact, making full expensing permanent was one of the things that businesses asked for in this particular survey. 55% asked for that.
Right. Well, that's a positive step at least. And I believe some 52% of manufacturers surveyed identified difficulties in understanding and applying tax exemptions or incentives. So why is that happening?
Yes, I think this is the one epic piece of area that maybe the Treasury has always struggled with, where they assume that everybody else has come from the experience of working in the Treasury. So applying tax exemption incentives is perhaps the biggest burden. So this is part of the reason why we say don't introduce new ideas for manufacturers, because actually it does take them a long time. The most popular tool that businesses use in the UK, manufacturers specifically, is R&D tax credits, because they are the biggest innovators in the UK. They account for about 40% of all total R&D expenditure. But even that policy, which is the most popular for manufacturers, often is criticized for its complexity and difficulties in applying, mainly because it's not always clear what would count as the research part of R&D, what would be accounted for as a development part of R&D, and what can you actually claim for. And what we find is often manufacturers have to go out, they have to seek out consultants who are self-proclaimed experts in doing this. And whilst the experts do a really, really good job, in fact, what the experts have shown is that because they are able to generate a positive outcome with all these consultations, it proves that manufacturers themselves do not understand R&D tax credits well enough to be able to do it themselves. We see the same issue with capital allowances. And whilst the government definition of what is allowable for claiming on capital allowances is most plant and machinery, and then they have a list of some examples on the Treasury HMRC website, but the list of examples doesn't encompass everything. And so if you're not an expert and you've not been dealing with this for many, many years, you might not necessarily know what would qualify, what would not qualify. We just had a conversation recently with a member who were asking us if software would qualify for capital allowances now that full expensing has been made permanent. And whilst we were looking into, we were speaking to the legal department on that, there is a precedent for software being allowable for capital allowances, but it depends on whether or not you have bought the license for a certain number of years versus if you're on a subscription. If you own the license, then you could claim it on capital allowances, but if you don't, then you cannot. This requires an expert. What is the problem here is that the majority of businesses in the manufacturing sector are SMEs. Most of them do not have very large teams of accountants and financial professionals or experts who have dealt with these things. And so making a system complex in turn becomes a burden to access, and it significantly or disproportionately affects SMEs more than larger businesses.
Well, that's very interesting, especially considering that so much of the UK manufacturing sector is made up of SMEs. So a significant percentage of manufacturers surveyed suggested that lack of policy certainty has contributed to their decision not to proceed with investments, R&D, and in skills and training as well. You know, given the changes or significant number of changes that we've had in recent years, and with elections set for some time in 2024, in your view, what does the next government need to do to promote manufacturing growth?
Yes, so certainly, and I guess we've already touched on this frequent changes of policy or policy flip-flopping over the last couple of years has been a burden on manufacturers, especially particularly on investment-making decision. And what we found from our survey results is that if you meet, perhaps you could say there are three criteria that you could meet on how you go about developing policy in the UK for manufacturing. And I'm sure this would also support other industries. Policies, from what manufacturers tell us, is they need to be long-term, they need to be simple and accessible, and they need to also be generous. So actually we need to not shy away from being generous to supporting our industries. So the election year will no doubt bring further uncertainty to the manufacturing sector. So we do expect that maybe in 2024, investment may not necessarily increase straight away, despite positive announcements from government, because there'll be that uncertainty on whether or not the political climate will change or will not. It's difficult to say. But then whoever the next government is, whether it's the incumbent or a new entrant, they need to really think about being sensitive to understanding how a business in the manufacturing sector actually operates and what they want. And I think our surveys, and not just now, but historically have shown that there are three principles to align to when it comes to policy development. It is to be long-term, to be accessible, and to be generous. If you meet these three criteria, and we cannot necessarily spell out exactly what the policy should be, if as long as it meets those criteria, it will be useful and supportive to the manufacturing sector. And I think that's what they want.
Well, that's very interesting, Vaheen, and thank you for your time. And fingers crossed that whichever government we do end up with takes those factors into account. So thank you
Indeed.
For joining us today.
Thank you.
And if you'd like to take a further look at that report, Manufacturing Growth, Building a Competitive Business Environment, it can be found on the Insights section of Make UK's website. Now, one of the event highlights for the first quarter of 2024 is certain to be Packaging Innovations and MPAC. Next, we're joined by Naomi Stewart, the show's marketing manager, to discuss what's on the agenda for the 2024 edition. For those who haven't attended before, to start off with, Naomi, could you tell us a bit more about Packaging Innovations and MPAC?
Yeah, so to put simply, Packaging Innovations and MPAC is an event with over 7,000 packaging professionals set to attend and 400 exhibitors. And it's split across three events. So it's Packaging Innovations, MPAC and Contract Pack and Fulfillment. So your Packaging Innovations is best known for showcasing the latest advancements and trends in packaging design, branding, materials. We're split across verticals in FMCG, cosmetics, sort of your everyday food packaging, pharmaceuticals, things like that. So it brings together professionals from various industries to explore packaging solutions. The MPAC side is focused on packaging technology and machinery. So it covers the latest developments in packaging equipment, materials, processes. It makes it particularly relevant for professionals involved in manufacturing and logistics. So on that sort of side of the show floor, you'd see your kind of more machinery type packaging, and then Packaging Innovations will be kind of your boxes and your labels and your print designs. We have another section of the show floor, which is called Contract Pack and Fulfillment in association with the BCMPA. So it represents about 200 members and connects individuals with outsourcing partners, enabling them for their business to grow. It's kind of aimed at your brand owners, retailers, manufacturers, or their plans to sell their products via e-commerce. So there's a partner that can provide the right services. The sectors in these also are food and drink, personal care and beauty, healthcare, chemical, household, white label and private label, and a lot more solutions.
Oh, perfect. So you've really got the whole packaging spectrum covered. And what are some of the focuses or key themes which are defining the agenda at the 2024 edition of the show?
We have three stages. So one of them is innovation design. The other one is circular economy. And we have another one, supply chain and manufacturing. So the main theme this year is sustainability, which runs through all three, not just on the circular economy stage. We'll cover topics including switching from plastic or reducing the use of plastic, net zero, recycling and reuse, and EPR legislation. So we've got speakers confirmed so far from Beer 52, Tesco, Honest Burgers, and we work quite closely with IOM3 as well. The agenda is going to offer practical tools and guidance to tackle some of the challenges facing the packaging industry. We have other key topics. We have a Women in Manufacturing panel and a new feature, our Future Trailblazers programme.
Excellent. And those themes such as sustainability and supply chain are obviously really key right now. And in terms of features activities, what's new at this event, this year's event? I believe you're launching a new awards.
Yes. So as mentioned before, we've got a new feature called the Future Trailblazers, which is in partnership with IOM3 and Mercury Search and Selection. So this feature aims to recognise talented individuals going above and beyond to shape the future of packaging. So a group of judges is going to look at the biggest contributions to change in the industry and the potential that these individuals may hold. Our judges are going to be awarding recognition to those that are driving forces in making a wider change in industries beyond packaging. So we've got five awards to give out. One of them is Design for the Future, aimed at technologists, designers, your print techs. And then another one is Production Delivery, aimed at production operatives and engineers. We have a Sustainable Thinking Award aimed at your sustainability professionals. Another one is Delivery Management, which is aimed at project managers and artwork coordinators. And then we've got another one called Making It Happen. So that's aimed at your buyers, supply chain and logistics, quality assurance type people.
Well, that sounds excellent. And you're really recognising some of the people who are working behind the scenes.
Yeah, I think it's important to recognise, you know, people that aren't always the face of the organisation, or maybe those who aren't making the loudest noise. But yeah, like you said, working behind the scenes.
Well, that's great. And so is there still the opportunity for those who'd like to exhibit to do so?
I believe there are some stands left, yes. You can get in touch through me and then I can pass that on to our sales team. There are stands in Package Innovations and MPAC. If anyone was interested in exhibiting, I can pass on the message.
Well, that's excellent. And for those who'd like to attend, when and where is Packaging and Innovations and MPAC taking place?
So it's at the NEC in Birmingham, taking place on the 21st and 22nd of February 2024. We are moving to new halls this year, just to sort of accommodate for the bigger event. We're, I think, over 60 exhibitors bigger than last year. And we're hoping to have a lot more visitors as well from the packaging industry. We open doors on the 21st of February at 10 a.m.
Well, that's excellent. So definitely a date to put in your diary.
Yeah, we're expecting over 7,000 packaging professionals. In my opinion, it is the biggest packaging event of the year. And I can't go into obviously too much detail about other speakers that we've got lined up as they're in the works, but I can, you know, quite confidently say that we're going to have a few other big brands speaking. So that's not to be missed, some household names on the stages.
Well, that sounds really exciting.
Yeah, so not confirmed yet, but we will have some entertainment on day one, probably at networking drinks. We've got a cocktail bar sponsored by Simply Cartons, and they usually do a theme. So expect some themed cocktails. And we've got a VIP area as well for our returning visitors.
Well, that sounds excellent and certainly one not to be missed. Thank you for joining us, Naomi.
Thank you, Ed.
And that's all for now. But if you've enjoyed this podcast, don't forget to check out our website, ipesearch.co.uk, and sign up to receive the free digital edition of Industrial Plant and Equipment. I'm Edward Loughton, and thank you for joining us for another edition of the IP&E podcast.